Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Hi, and welcome back. Today we are joined by David Pritchard of The Nile. This is episode number 253. So we were actually joined by David Pritchard back in episode one, would you believe? He was our first guest. So it's a privilege for me to have him back here. David is the country manager of The Nile. You'll hear more about that in the podcast, but I really consider him to be an operational guru, especially in the context of Philippines or outsourcing operations. So I certainly learned a lot in this episode, and I'm sure you will enjoy. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/253. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today we have a returning guest. It's David Pritchard of thenile.com.au, and David actually was our inaugural guest on the Outsource Accelerator podcast. Can you believe it? So hi, David, how are you? Thanks for coming back onto the show.
Hi, Derek. I'm really great and quite honored to be back on your podcast. It was great fun the first time, and had I known some of the illustrious people that you've had on since, I would have been even more honored the first time. So it's really great to be back.
Well, that's all right. And the pressure's on, and you've got to say everything absolutely original this time. I don't want any repeats.
But for those, I haven't listened to the previous episode that I did, so let's see whether I contradict myself.
Well, that's all right. And there might be a little bit of a spoiler in there, maybe. So for those that haven't done their homework and listened to the previous podcast, maybe you just want to briefly introduce yourself and, and you are obviously running the operations here for thenile.com.au. When I say here, that's in Manila. So how did you find yourself being here in Manila, running a team for The Nile?
Sure. So a little bit of background. So as you mentioned, I'm the country manager for thenile.com.au, country manager in the Philippines, and thenile.com.au is an online retailer in Australia. We sell books, toys, and baby accessories. How I found myself here was approximately 5 years ago. We went down the course that many small and medium enterprises do. In places like Australia, where we realized that our operational costs were too high, and also if we wanted to expand our business, we would have to expand in a more scalable way. And so we naturally explored options overseas, offshore, and figured out the Philippines was the best option for us for a number of reasons. So one of my colleagues, Jethro, who I believe you've interviewed recently, came over on a fact-finding mission and dipped his toes in this country in, I believe, 2013. And we decided that we would move most of our customer support and back-end operations to Manila over the course of about 6 months. And we had an operations manager that we hired in Australia to come over and lead that. And then I just put up my hand. I had a different role in the company. I'd been there pretty much since the founding, doing different things, wearing different hats. But I put up my hand to say, I'll go and sort of help out for the first few weeks just to get things off the ground, just make sure everything's running smoothly, and then fly home and get back to my usual life. But as is a common story in this country, it didn't quite work out like that. I never ended up getting my return ticket, and I've now been here 5 years, and it sort of gradually evolved for various reasons that I became the person in charge of all our operations here, the country head. And I'm very happy with that outcome. It's been a really good change for me in my life, and it's been a fascinating 5 years here so far, and more interesting experiences and adventures to come.
No doubt, no doubt. And life is good. David, I don't want to go back and, you know, explore your mindset in terms of the first journey here, the first sort of the first efforts into outsourcing. You know, obviously now you've been outsourcing and evolving for the last 5 years. And, you know, outsourcing, like business itself, isn't really ever static, and everything always needs changing, needs iterating, needs updating. So, you know, I suppose instead of going right back and sort of seeing your mindset compared to now, as an overview, looking over the 5 years, how have you seen this operation, your operation in the Philippines, evolve? What are some of the kind of milestones or things that stick out as you reflect?
Absolutely, yeah. I won't go back and take you through 5 years of history, because that is quite a dull thing to do. But as I think I touched on in our original podcast interview, one of the biggest challenges that we faced in the beginning, and that still kind of lingered for the first few years, was how you dive into outsourcing and make outsourcing work when you're a small and medium enterprise that hasn't been built on the usual kind of best practices and industry standards that larger organizations have. So, you know, we built a very bespoke business based on what our needs were at the time, in this case online retail, and then we had to try and transfer that into the usual methods that the outsourcing industry has in this country, which are really designed for the bigger end of town, where you have, you know, really locked in SOPs, standard operating procedures, and processes that require many hundreds of people. Didn't quite work for the nature of our business for a few reasons. And so that has really been the challenge that we have had pretty much for the last 5 years, to be honest. You know, we've had some successes, but if you'd spoken to me about 12 months ago, I would have said to you that that is still the biggest thing we have to conquer, is to how to move our business model and translate it into what people are used to here, and finding a way to make outsourcing work when outsourcing has really been developed for a very different kind of environment or nature of business.
And, you know, after 5 years, to what extent does it become outsourcing? And I mean, you're based here and, you know, from what I understand, your team are... you know, just another part of the Nile. They're not outsourced. They're not a separate team. They are, you know, a part of the culture and a part of the core of the company. To what degree is this any more outsourcing? And why? What is the crux of the issue in terms of feeling that it's slightly putting a square peg into a round hole? What are some of the fundamentals or fundamental points of friction that you see with outsourcing?
Two really interesting questions. I'll go to the first one. So you mentioned how sometimes the lines can be blurred and you don't really think of yourself as an outsourcing operation after a while. We had some conventional wisdom that we applied in the early years, which have now changed on quite significantly. And I believe Jethro touched on this also in your interview with him. We figured that the best way to get loyalty out of our employees and to get them focused and to get them really passionate about what they were doing was to say, hey, you guys aren't just outsource employees fulfilling a contract for some offshore operation. You're actually part of our global organization. You work for the Nile. You're not just part of an outsourcing operation. We thought that was a key thing that would change their mindset in a positive way, because most outsourcing, as you know, is usually for larger companies, and normally you're working for a large outsourcing provider like Convergys or Teleperformance or whoever it is, and they, you know, they really just think of themselves as employees for that BPO company, and then the actual company they're doing the work for is really just the client or the campaign. Mm-hmm. So we figured, no, because we're a small and medium enterprise and because we have staff dedicated to us, we can avoid that and say, hey, guys, this is much better. You're working for the Nile. You're actually working for an Australian company. We're all part of the same team. Think of your counterparts in our Sydney office that you're talking to as just your colleagues. And we thought that would be a great approach, and we thought that would possibly avoid some of the communication and lines of operation problems that people encounter. It did work in some respects, but we made a significant change about 12 months ago. Previously, we've been partnered up with an outsourcing provider here, where we had staff that were 100% dedicated to us, but they were actually employed by the outsourcing provider. And so we said, just ignore your contracts that say you're hired by this company. In fact, you're part of our team, and it's just purely for legal reasons that you are you have a contract saying somebody else. Mm. For various sort of cost and operational reasons, we decided, no, we're going to move our employees to our own Philippine corporate entity. So we have a company set up in the Philippines, and we moved our employees. We actually left that provider and went to a different facilities provider. And as part of that change, all of our employees were moved to our Philippine entity, Nile PH Outsourcing Services. Now, it's called an outsourcing company because it effectively provides outsourcing services to our parent company, even though we actually own it and it's exclusively for us. Now, the thing that went against the conventional wisdom for us and what we've been thinking previously was that suddenly we now had this entity in the Philippines and we could forge a sense of identity that was linked to that Philippine entity, and we could say, right, this is Nile PH, this is what we're part of, that's the company you work for. Mm-hmm. And we were able to create a company culture internally that was just in the Philippines. And it wasn't sort of dependent on whatever was happening in Australia or elsewhere. We still kind of say you're part of the Nile, but it made a remarkable psychological change for our employees that I could not have anticipated previously, where they now actually sort of have a local entity that they belong to. That was part of it. And the other part was that it actually clarified very clearly that, okay, so we are effectively doing outsourcing. Obviously, it's for the same company, but the kind of blurred lines that existed previously were no longer there because we said, right, we're actually fulfilling contract specific lines of business for the parent company. That's what we do. That's our mission. That's what we focus on. And that clarity has had very positive outcomes for performance and productivity. So it's interesting that it's worked out that way. And it's kind of a variant on the one big family approach that we previously were focused on, and I believe Jethro also mentioned. But I have to point that out as a major success over the last 12 months.
Incredible, isn't it? You know, and do you think the clarity, I assume the clarity hasn't necessarily come from the different corporate entity. Has the clarity, was it sort of born from that process, but it's born from just like changing the SOPs, changing, just building clarity in terms of the processes?
Well, exactly. The clarity doesn't come about just because you've got a different document or a different name on your contract. But it did trigger a kind of a psychological change of approach. Our employees previously had sort of been told, oh, well, you know, like I said, you're effectively work for us even though you work for a different company. It only went so far. In their own mindset, they thought, oh, we work for this BPO provider, which was a third party. Suddenly, they had a greater sense of ownership in the business when they realized they worked for our own Philippine entity. Right. And that then triggered a lot of changes, both at an employee level and at a management level, where we did clarify our SOPs and made various actions and things that made it clearer and more in line with what we were supposed to be delivering. But a catalyst was the actual psychological change by our employees belonging to a Philippine entity.
Incredible. And now imagine, I'm just sort of trying to dig a little bit deeper in here and figure out the mechanisms, I suppose. If, you know, and the Nile is a sort of fantastic company spanning many countries already, but, you know, how do you feel this might play out if you were also in Northern America and in Europe and, you know, you had these different offices all contributing towards, you know, one brand, one name. Do you think there would be the same difficulty in terms of identity and the struggles for, you know, role clarification and things like that? Is it something specific to outsourcing and or the Philippines? Or is it, you know, potentially due to the tyranny of distance, having people in different offices, slightly different cultures? Where is the kind of crux?
Oh, I would say the answer to that is it's the latter, primarily. It's not fundamentally limited to outsourcing or the Philippines, although there possibly is a significant cultural component in that thing I mentioned about the sense of belonging and identity by having your contract belonging to a certain company. I think there could be a Philippine aspect in that. But overall, I think, no, it's just part of the challenges of operating a large organization. And I think the model to think about, if you know software, is kind of like the API model, where you know you have like a central node, and then you have different units that are fulfilling different tasks. Mm-hmm. And then you need to define a protocol between those units so that they communicate according to certain standards and certain frameworks. And that means you can sort of operate separate units and have them stand alone, and then they can interact very effectively because they are communicating according to certain protocols and guidelines, as opposed to a more sort of scattered model where you have all these different lines of communication and it's all sort of blurred. So Amazon, for example, is a large organization that operates on that model. And for us, I think we weren't that way. We developed much more organically, and so there were a lot of blurred lines. But we changed that and became more effective. If you want to concretize it a little bit more, it's like you mentioned, sort of standard operating procedures. We might have a certain line of business where we have a team that is updating our product catalog. So they're adding products to our catalog so that we can sell them online. Previously, it would have just been sort of a case of us, somebody in Sydney saying, hey, we need this work done. Here's the rough way you do it. Here's some instructions. Please go and do that. And then we would have had that team busy doing that, but we wouldn't have had any really clear sort of KPIs or guidelines in place. We changed that to say, no, okay, so you want us to fulfill this particular requirement. You have a certain output you need. Therefore, let's have an internal contract, right? An internal service level agreement. This is exactly what you need. This is how you need it done. And this is the level of productivity you expect. And this is the metric to measure that productivity. Our job is to fulfill that contract. And that instills a degree of discipline on both sides. If the other side comes and asks us to do something that doesn't fit in with that service level agreement, we'll go back to them and say, well, wait a second, that's not covered here. So if you want us to do it, we need to redefine our SLA so that it's clear. Otherwise, you're asking us to do something that's going to distract us from our primary goal, which is to fulfill this mission. So from an operational level, I think having it that way, so you have those clear lines of communication, those clear agreed upon objectives and metrics between the units, is very effective. And so we have been moving, we're not perfect, we still have a lot of blurry lines, but we're moving towards that model. And then there's a second aspect to it, which is about the corporate identity. I went and visited another company recently in the Philippines. I won't say which one, but it was a totally different industry. It was in the manufacturing industry. So nothing that obviously, in terms of what they did, would mirror or you'd expect to be similar with our business, which is online retail. But they'd undergone some major cultural changes in their organization. They had implemented a mindset and problem solving and productivity improving mechanism called Kaizen, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Absolutely.
What they said was that they also were a Philippine entity, and they said that their parent entity had not implemented any of these cultural changes. And some of their biggest frustrations were dealing with the parent entity, because that entity wasn't applying that methodology to their work. And yet, by thinking of it as a totally separate unit, they had the freedom to go and implement that in their organization, and they weren't constrained by whatever was going on in head office or whatever limitations there might have been with head office. So by having an autonomous unit, it gives you a far greater degree to actually do what you want to do in this country. That's relevant for anybody that's in a position like mine.
Yeah, and there's probably some fundamental lessons to be learned from that, because they say humans, generally... when you fit into tribes and groups, people fundamentally can't work with groups much bigger than about 100 people. And maybe, you know, just things need to be broken down into individual business units so that, you know, there's relevance to those people. They have autonomy so that they can build their own processes that suits them and their specific culture. Maybe if you try and aggregate everyone together, then nothing works, you know. So maybe you've just found your sweet spot in terms of size and efficiency and identity and maybe the geography, is a major distraction from having that core identity, yeah.
You reminded me of something there. I think it's Amazon or somebody that has the rule for teams that no more than two pizzas. Do you remember that one, Derek?
No.
Where they, like, it's only
per person.
So big that you can feed them pizzas. not per person, although I could maybe get through two. But no, say that I think Amazon has a rule that a team can't be bigger, larger than what you can feed with two family-sized pizzas.
Right.
And that's how they limit it to manageable sizes. Interesting principle.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, and I try and tell people, not that I'm any sort of business guru myself, but, you know, outsourcing really is no different to just general business or management or, you know, any of these business philosophies. And there's endless books, thousands, you know, infinite number of books on how to manage teams, how to manage efficiently, how to build efficient running businesses. And it's something that really never ends, is it? Now, it sounds like you're almost reaching a stage of operational bliss, if I may, David. You know, everything is it now seems that things are becoming smooth, you know what you're dealing with, and it's now just about ironing out the final wrinkles. Do you think this is consistent with a business, you know, the Nile is now maturing slightly, you've been going, you know, nearly 20 years, is it the sign of a maturing business when, you know, nothing is that new anymore? And what if you were to radically change or grow by 600% or something radical? Do you think that would then just introduce a lot more hubris? Or now that you have the systems down in place, you know, the systems would then accommodate for the change and the growth and things like that?
Well, I would think it would be hubristic to actually say that we've reached some mature stage. And it's also a really boring thought. I think you master whatever challenges you have, and then there are always going to be larger challenges. It's a constant process. And, yeah, I mean, the business has been running 20 years in Australia and New Zealand, and, of course, it's evolved a lot and changed a lot, and the direction has changed, and it looks very different to how it did in those early years. But I don't think we've ever been at a point where we've said that we've become mature and just settled into certain ways. I think it's always just about finding a new challenge, which is the approach we have. We certainly haven't reached a bliss point. There's a degree of satisfaction that we're starting to really see some of the original objectives we had, and we're seeing levels of productivity that are much better than we had previously. And I'm talking about the context of the Philippines now. That's really great, but there are always going to be new challenges, and we believe in constant continuous improvement. So, you know, as soon as we master one thing, if there isn't a new challenge that presents itself, we go out and find another one.
Mm. And, you know, if you were to do this again, start your outsourcing journey from scratch, I'm sure you could shave off many months or years of frustration and learning and maybe, you know, going down rabbit holes. And what are the key things, though? Because I think also, you know, even if you know, and I'm sure you could write an incredible book on how to master this, if people are then starting their own outsourcing journey, it can't be mastered by writing a book, reading a book. And maybe it's a little bit like you know, mastering a martial art, and you just have it's the practice. But what are some of the core fundamentals you think that you've taken away over the last 5 years that you think would kind of refine a newbie's journey into outsourcing?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, and I often just fantasize about going back 5 years with the knowledge I now have. Of course, that's just an intellectual exercise. But yeah, there are certain things that I often wish to myself, if only somebody had just told me this and sat down with me in those early months and explained this to me. But the reality is some of it you just have to experience. But a key thing that I would say to any person starting out, especially if they're in the kind of situation that we're in, where you're a company that, you know, we're talking about a scale of employees of less than 100. In our case, we're somewhere between 30 and 50 employees, and you don't have really established SN lines of business already in your parent company. You need to start thinking about the line of business approach from day one. Now, what I mean by that, just to give you an illustration, is that we figured that we had a department called customer service. That's what we called this department in our original onshore office in Australia. And we thought, right, customer service just deals with anything to do with communicating with customers. And that includes a wide range of things. It includes answering emails. It includes taking calls. It includes taking communication through a few other channels, like some of the third-party marketplaces we deal with have their own channels. It includes dealing with returns that come in from customers. It actually encompasses quite a few different things. But we just said, right, we are going to ramp down our customer service department in Australia, and we're going to transfer it over here. And so everything that falls under customer service, we've hired some people in the Philippines. Right, we're going to give you all that work. You know, we'll write up a few instructions and guidelines, but you need to learn that and you need to deliver that. So our thinking was, right, customer service needs to be transferred across. And so we tried to do that. And for the first few years, we had that, and we transferred all of those different things, some of which were well-defined, some of which weren't. And then we had a team that was struggling to get through it all, and they weren't delivering the kind of productivity that we expected. Suddenly, I realized that there's a different way things are done in outsourcing. What we really need to do is to identify each individual task and think of that as one deliverable that you devote people to. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the team should not be called customer service. What are they doing? Well, the single largest task we have is answering email, inbound email from customers. And so I said, wait a second, we need to have an inbound email team. We need to have a team that is focused on just doing inbound email and call them that inbound email, and that's what they deliver. And then build an SOP around that and build a deliverable about that. Don't distract them with a whole bunch of other stuff. Mm. Just get them doing that. And you don't in our case, it needed to be, in order to take that approach, you probably need a task that requires at least one full-time headcount. If it's smaller than that, then it's a challenge. But in this case, we even at our slowest period, we needed a few people to do that. So I transformed it, around about 12 months ago, and I created an inbound email team, and I created a strict service level agreement, which defined exactly what they're supposed to do and the output they're supposed to have. And then I made people focused on just doing that one thing. And then I had team leads that were focused on purely that thing as well, rather than trying to juggle all these different tasks that we previously put under the banner of customer service. And you know what? The output has been probably at least, it's hard to measure exactly, but I would say you've had at least 25% improved productivity on that.
How does it work when, you know, I understand if you have enough volume to cover one yeah. full person, but what happens if you have then, like 20 subtasks, each person needs to yeah. be attached to a subtask, and then you must have a lot of like loose ends and odd amounts of work left over. Some people are overworked, some people are underworked. How do you deal with those individual silos?
Well, first of all, you want to try and simplify. Do you really need those 20 different tasks? Can you consolidate them? Can certain ones be eliminated? And that, of course, needs to be a process you go through with. It's not just in your outsourcing operation. You need to get input and buy-in from your counterparts in onshore to actually work through that. So work through that list and get it as simple as possible. And I imagine that most companies that have that list of 20 things that you're talking about, if they really focus some energy into it, they can probably reduce it. Certain things maybe can be consolidated, so we can just eliminate them. So first of all, try and rationalize and make that as small a list as possible. So once you've got that in place, great. And then if you've still got a list of things that can't be broken up into individual headcounts, each individual task is not big enough for one full-time employee, then you have to take the approach where you consolidate them according to what sort of area they fit together. So if you've got something that's really an accounting process and something else that is a fulfillment process or a procurement process, split those apart so that they're all sort of linked under the same heading, and then get an individual or a team devoted to that, and then get people that are innovators and people that are focused on being as productive as possible. And then you KPI them based on getting through all of those tasks on time. And as long as they are guided by that and you give them the right support and you have the right people in place, then their focus simply is that they have a task list which has to be completed with certain deadlines for each task, and just drive them and incentivize them to be as productive as possible. And that's the best approach you can have there. But it still involves having some pretty clear guidelines in place. But that's what we've done with those tasks.
Fantastic. So instead of having an org chart, as most people have, an organization chart with sort of people's names, you're actually flipping it around and having roles or functions and then attaching the team members under that which are responsible for those tasks.
Exactly. And I'll just, the earlier part I mentioned, I can't stress the importance of, it's actually working and getting buy-in from your onshore office to actually try to simplify those tasks. Because the more complexity there is, the more mess you're going to have and less desirable outcomes. And the other thing is to avoid that trap of thinking that outsourcing is some kind of panacea and you can just, excuse my French, but you can just export all your crap work across to some offshore office where the labor is cheaper and then they can deal with it. That is the worst possible result. You know, the need for simplicity, the need for efficiency, and clarity as a business requirement does not disappear when you transfer work over to a cheaper location. And so you need to work very actively. And in our case, we had certain tasks that were leading to dysfunctional outcomes. And we investigated it. We looked into it and we realized that the source of some of that dysfunction was problems with processes that were happening in Sydney. And so we went to Sydney and said, hey, you guys need to change the way you're doing things because we're getting this work that is incredibly labor intensive and messy and it's not leading to outcomes, but the actual source of it is dysfunction in your processes in Sydney. And so that was a major thing that's happened over the last 12 months with a couple of fairly large bits of work that we do here. I got buy-in from some key people in Sydney and got them to make major changes, including in one of our fulfillment centers that led to better outcomes for the business on the whole. And then the work that we get in Sydney that sort of comes downstream from those processes, sorry, the work we get in Manila that comes downstream from those processes is much more manageable and more efficient. So it needs to be a company-wide buy-in and approach to that task list to try and make it as effective as possible.
Incredible. You know, it really is. And, you know, you're talking a lot about clarifying the roles and actually just by you actually clarifying this, you know, and going into the depth of what it means to clarify roles, I think it's super, super valuable. You know, I look to you as being like the process king or the operational guru in this stuff because, and I think this is what's needed. One thing I want to put back to you, and I want to get you back to, so we can deep dive more into general, you know, operational peak performance. But to close this off, you know, the siloing you mentioned, the clarification of roles, sounds like a fantastic operational protocol generally. Do you think this is just a protocol suited for the Philippines, or is this an ideal protocol for a worldwide organization? You know, is this something that is specific to the Philippines, or is it just how to run an efficient ship?
It is how to run an efficient ship. It's the latter. Every time I come across a eureka moment, or every time I have come across one of those light bulb moments over the last 5 years, the initial immediate context for me is outsourcing in the Philippines. But ultimately, it always comes back to something that is simply a basic principle of management that is not limited to this environment. I always come to it through the route of outsourcing in the Philippines, but almost always it is a basic principle of organization and good business management.
Fantastic. We shall end with that, David. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I want to get you back, of course, to talk more broadly about operational fundamentals, so people should join in for that. But in the meantime, if anyone wants to get in touch with you or know more about the Nile, how should they do that?
Well, you can check out our retail website, which is The Nile, like the river in Egypt, thenile.com.au. If you want to get in touch with me, I think David Pritchard Philippines should probably find it. I'm on LinkedIn, reasonably easy to find through various channels.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, David.
Thanks, Derek.
That was David Pritchard of thenile.com.au. If you want to get in touch with David or see any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/253. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.